Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it. Adam, before we get into today's episode, let's just take a moment here to say the episode of Trek that we're reviewing today deals with the issue of suicide. And we just want to say, like, we're going to do a real episode of Greatest Gen here, but suicide is not something we take lightly, and we want folks out there to know that if that's something that they're struggling with, that's going to be part of this episode. And if you are struggling with it imminently, we would highly recommend you reach out to the folks at the National Suicide Prevention Hotline, which is 800-273-8255.
The hotline is available 24 hours a day, and it's totally confidential. And if you're feeling some feelings in that area, both Ben and I would definitely recommend you give them a call.
You know, you're really valuable. And the thing that that tells people that suicide is an idea is part of a disease, and you should not listen to that disease. And as somebody who's had those feelings in the past, don't feel ashamed to reach out for help, because that's what these people are there for. It's 800-273-8255. Now let's get on with the show.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Hey, Adam, guess what? I got a package here from, I'm going to guess, Germany?
Boy, this is a setup for a really awful joke, Ben, but how can you tell the packages from Germany? Scheisen packaging.
It's been pounded very thin, breaded, and fried.
Perfect. That was just a wiffle ball of a setup.
I don't know for sure if it's from Germany or not. It's from Angela. And I'm just saying, the stuff on here that says what country it's from is in a tongue I don't understand. But I'm going to cut it open and see what it is. This actually came in, I think a day or two before we left for our tour, so I hope it's not perishable. Okay, Adam, I've opened the box. I've got a letter here. It says, "Hi, Ben and Adam. I've been a faithful viewer of your pod pretty much since it started. It's brought me lots of laughter, and on one occasion caused me to think that my car was breaking down due to Adam recording using a bad mic or something.
Aww.
Your pod came into my life at a rough time right after my wife passed away, and finding reasons to smile and laugh helped me get through that. Your jokes, but also hearing how much fun you guys must have when recording this, has been a part of that. As a thank you, I'm sending some stuff.
Wow.
Being that you recently ran out of cards, maybe you might enjoy this. There are no packs to open. I already did that several years ago, but there are lots of cards. Also, I'm including some Swedish candy." Oh, it's not Germany after all. "Some Swedish candy that is not relevant to the show in any way, but having listened to you reviewing 6+ seasons of TNG, I know you're not above getting off topic from time to time. Keep the fun coming." Oh, man, I may have been mispronouncing this. Angelin.
Megweeds?
It's 8
Anglen. How would you pronounce that? Anglen?
Anglen?
Megweeds?
I don't know. God, I feel like a real idiot now. This is going to be one of those episodes where it's really tempting to edit out what a big fat idiot I am, but I think I can't do it. I think the people need to know. Well, Adam, we've got a lot of stuff in here. There's something called Not Krem Original, and they're kind of like ketchup packet type things with some sort of goopy stuff in them.
I hate it when I go through the effort and get Not Krem.
We've got something called Original Salta Patroner, which I'm going to guess is a licorice.
Yeah?
It's got kind of a like a warning label art direction to it, like a police line do not cross type art direction.
So Ben, I have a request. Would you mind doing an impromptu taste test of these things on mic?
I will do an impromptu taste test of one of these things. I'm going to tell you two more of them, and you can pick which one you want me to taste the most. We've of course got some Bolar. Some Algrin's Bolar Svergis Meskoptabil original, which...
Oh, I'm glad you got the original, because the diet is terrible.
Yeah, it's got like pink, white, and greenish, like car-shaped marshmallows or something. and then, of course, we've got Cloetta Kex Choclad.
And what does that look like?
It's more of a chocolate bar looking format, kind of like a Hershey bar type shape, like a broad and thin bar, and it's got either a wafer or honeycomb implication in the font.
Honeycomb implication sounds so serious. Ben, my vote's the Bolar for marshmallow reasons.
Okay, that's the one I'm least terrified to taste. So.
Oh, okay.
Maybe just for stunts, I'll try the Not Krem also.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, these are not... Bolar are not... they're not marshmallows. They're like gummy candies that are surrounded with some sort of candy coating. Oh, pretty good.
A thin candy shell, if you will.
It's not a shell as such. It's like it's a softer coating than that. But they taste real nice. Oh man. Oh my God, Adam. I just got to the bottom of this box, and there is a tin at the bottom of this box that looks to be the motherlode of Star Trek CCG collectible card game decks.
Oh man.
Oh man, this is bonkers. Oh, there's so many of them.
We met a really cool dude at one of our shows that handed us a couple of custom Jim Shimoda cards for this game. There is a group called the Continuing Committee at StarTrekCC.org that continues to make cards for that game. And... this person mentioned that they make cards. They have started making cards based on our show, like things that our show has called attention to, and one of them was Jim Shimoda.
Swear to be faithful to you, Captain.
That's so great.
Yeah.
Man, Adam, I'm going to guess that there are like several hundred new additions to our collection of cards here. These look to be Silver Border, which... somebody told us that's a significant thing. Like there's different editions of the game, and you can tell by the border on the cards. But man, if there wasn't so much randomness involved, I'd really be threatening you big time about the next Star Trek card game war we have.
Love that game. It's a big hit, Ben.
All right, should I try some Not Krem?
Yeah. Try that Not Krem. I've been trying it for years.
Do you think that you're supposed to like spread this on something?
Well, what do you have to spread it on, Ben?
All I have here is some more John beer.
Stick it in a Kong. Give it to Darwin.
Not creme. Reminds me a lot of Nutella.
Oh, okay.
It's got a little bit more of a mouthfeel than Nutella. It's like it's a little gritty. Like the nuts haven't been entirely pulverized.
Oh, it's for Nutella people who like chunky peanut butter.
Yeah,
I get kinda that.
Kind of like not creme.
Hence, not creme. Wow. Thanks so much for those gifts. The gifts of food. The gifts of non-spoilable food, specifically.
Yeah, thank you for not sending something that was going to rot in the box in my apartment.
Well, one thing that may have spoiled before we got to it, Ben, is the episode we're going to review today. It's really one of those Season 7 eps, I think. It's Season 7, Episode 18, Eye of the Beholder.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
Now, Adam, this episode is one of those exciting cold opens that we really love. Like, the camera fades up on, like, one of the panels that goes red when there's a red alert, and we pull out to the bridge, and...
We are losing containment in the starboard nacelle, too.
There is a major warp emergency, and they are preparing to eject the core. That's how ill it has gotten.
Yeah, things seem super fraught, and we get our first look at a brand new playset, Ben. The interior of the warp nacelle playset.
Yeah, you get to see Riker and Worf like climbing up a ladder in the Jeffries tubes, and they go into the room from which the nacelle is administered, I guess.
This workplace is not ADA compliant because every time anyone enters this scene, they have to do it through the tube and up the ladder, right?
Yeah. It must have been grandfathered in. It was built before the code was passed.
Right. It's a neat scene that doesn't quite show the depth of the nacelle, right? The idea of seeing inside of it is amazing. But Ben, I wish it looked longer.
If Frakes had directed this episode, he would have managed to make it look very long. Very long indeed, Adam. Yeah, there's like a door up a ladder, and when they come in, there's a woman with some loaf working down on the ground floor, and then up on a catwalk looking out of a kind of a garage door that looks into a deeper space. The inner nacelle is an ensign, and he's like in a state, you know. Riker gets up on there and he's like, hey man, like,
whatever happened, we can talk about it. I want to help.
And he is like, he is totally in a fugue. Like, he doesn't know where he is or what's going on.
I know what I have to do.
And Riker is doing his best to talk him out of it.
Riker's like, I don't have the words, but I think this CD does. And he puts in Third Eye Blind's Jumper. And then just sort of like lays back in the cut, like letting the song play for the whole scene.
He does the like, I'm looking at you, looking at me, looking at you with his fingers.
He's like, huh? Huh? Yeah. This is great songwriting.
You should stop doing crystal meth, dude.
This is as good as Third Eye Blind got. I mean, a lot of people prefer the subsequent album, but for me, it will always be this release.
This episode probably came out fairly concurrent with that song being a big hit.
Yeah, probably on the minds of the writers.
Yeah. But he jumps, and he jumps into, like, the nexus of plasma that is being injected into the nacelle, and it, like, vaporizes him instantly.
And it really puts Riker on his ass, like, to have been witness to it. He is devastated, and it made me wonder how many suicides on screen we've gotten in this show. I feel like someone has turned a phaser on themselves before, but
not in a Starfleet uniform.
That's what I'm saying. And so to see a member of the crew do this was horrifying.
Yeah, he like slams his hand against the wall. And
so often the wall is what Riker needs to get through an emotional time, and here he is lashing out at said wall. Yeah.
How many times has that wall been there for you, Riker?
You can tell he's upset because he's taking it out on the wall.
What's up with all these like junior level loaf officers getting stuck up in the cell? Like, oh, you've got a one-off loaf? We're going to need you in the most remote part of the ship.
Daniel Kwan has basically a serving platter of loaf. Like, it's very simple. It's just the curvature of a platter on his forehead.
Yeah, but his boss has, like, I don't know, like a heat sink from a microprocessor on her face.
I thought his boss looked like she had cow nose loaf.
Cow nose loaf? No way.
Yeah, she has sort of a cow nose. Like, it all gathers in the nose. It made me wonder if her tongue felt very sandpapery when she licks you. As bosses go, they don't come any more docile than Lieutenant Nara.
Yeah.
You just lead her to her station and then lead her back home.
You can get out of any shift if you bring your collie with you.
So dumb.
So we come back from the opening title sequence, and Picard has gathered like Worf and Troy and Riker in his office to talk about what just went down, and he kind of puts them onto an investigation. He says, like,
I would like to be able to offer Lieutenant Kwan's parents some explanation of what happened.
There's only so many satisfying things you can tell somebody about somebody taking their own life. Like, it is ultimately like a really, like, it's an act that defies explanation, but I want to be able to like give them a picture of what he was going through. Like, obviously this dude was in a bad way, and we as a crew kind of neglected that. You know, nobody was picking up on the signs. So, like, let's look into it. Let's see what we missed.
Picard's been talking to a lot of parents lately about the deaths of his crew people. Yeah. Made me wonder, like, has he worked his way through the entire Borgs list?
Everybody, or from Wolf 359? Hey, listen.
He gives himself 20 a day. That's really emotionally all he can handle.
It's like a representative in the house calling for donations all day, every day.
Computer, how many more on the list?
37 million. You will complete your calls in 2,000 years.
Meanwhile, Data and Geordi are like hanging out in engineering, talking about it. And like, Data confesses to Geordi that he once contemplated turning himself off. And it's like, yeah, Data, we know. We've seen 7 seasons of the show.
Data's puberty story, which is what I thought this was, is Wesley asking why anyone would want to use drugs. Like, this is that scene all over again. Yeah. Data's like, during my awkward prepubescence, my pubes weren't growing in properly, and my voice was all cracky, and like my positronic net was forming in a weird way, and I thought about just quitting altogether. It would have been easier.
I'd seen my father's penis when his robe flopped open, and my penis didn't look like that, so I was quite concerned that I would never be able to satisfy a woman.
That open robe, Dr. Soong. Come on, man. Double knot that robe.
I thought that this scene was maybe the most awful thing in the episode, because they give, like, you're right, it's Wesley asking why would somebody do drugs, but it's also like Data saying, like, I arrived at the conclusion that I should treat these things as challenges to overcome rather than obstacles. And that's great for you, Data, but like, you don't have emotional diseases in android world. Like, depression is a real thing that really convinces people to commit suicide. Like, and it's not as easy as just talking your way out of it sometimes.
Right, because without emotions, all those are our challenges. Like,
yeah,
they were never anything besides challenges to Data. So there is no emotional gravity to that. And so in terminating his life, that is the end of a life. And that is bad. But it does not seem like it has the equivalence that he assumes that it does.
Geordi's response really like reinforces this idea, which he says, that's a great way to look at it, Data. And it's like, no, it's not. Like, sometimes you actually need medication to overcome those feelings. Like, that's a real thing.
As if Geordi is a person who hasn't suffered from some form of depression throughout the series. I'm no armchair psychoanalyst, but, like, Geordi's got some problems.
Oh, word?
Like, I don't think he knows what he's talking about.
No, Adam, he doesn't.
Neither of them do, which is why this scene in the episode rings as so transparently preachy. You know?
Yeah. Worf and Troi go to Lieutenant Kwan's apartment, and I thought this was a great bit of art direction because, like, his apartment really has an aesthetic. Like,
yeah.
Like, he totally has a style as a person, and you can see it in the things that are in there. And, like, they talk about how he's part Nurian. He's, like, part some other kind of alien.
I think Worf really respects his chair game, because he has a chair that looks profoundly hostile to sit in. I feel like Worf took a look at that thing and was like, yeah, I think I could have been buds with this guy. It's too bad.
That thing's spiky as hell.
Chair game, recognized chair game.
And they're talking like, you know, this dude did something pretty unthinkable, and so he must have been in an unimaginable amount of pain. Let's take a look around. They find a picture of his girlfriend, Ensign Calloway.
That's O'Calloway.
And she's a medical technician in Six Bay. And they're like, well, damn, like, he had a girl. Like, he's this young officer with all this potential. Nobody saw this coming. Maybe we should look into his personal logs. And so they fire it up. And his last entry is like him like grinning into the camera saying like,
after pulling two double shifts in a row, I'm really looking forward to spending some time with Maddie.
Can you imagine recording something like that? I guess this is kind of what people do with YouTube, actually. He's like vlogging for himself.
When you join the Federation, I wonder if there is an encouragement to document your life because lives are worth documentation, and, you know, you are going to do important and amazing things throughout your career, things that people are going to want to study and learn from. I wonder if there is any of that baked into a career, or if this is like what Twitter is now, where this is just really a thing that people do because it's zeitgeisty and people do a personal log, and this is his Twitter, you know?
Yeah. It'd be funny if you could see the like little fountain of hearts popping up in the corner as people like it as it goes out live on Periscope.
Yeah. I mean, you get the sense in this case the personal log is protected and that you need special permission to access them the way that Troi and Worf have.
Well, maybe it's like what my wife does, which is she has an Instagram, but she, you know, you have to like request access to follow her.
Hmm. Well, I keep mine the same way, so I'm not going to hate on that.
Well, there you go. There's a perfect example, Adam. They go down to Six Bay, and they talk to Ensign Calloway, who's like, you know, just like, she's just as gobsmacked about this as anybody else. She's like, I can't even imagine having to go put in a shift at work after your boyfriend jumps into a plasma stream. And she's like, yeah, like, hey, can you take 5 from your job and talk to me about this?
That is a feeling that I have had. I worked in an office space where our boss died in the parking lot of a heart attack.
Jeez.
Like the morning of work one day. And
wow.
It was awful. Awful in the ways that you would expect to be awful, but also like, in the practical sense of like, our work doesn't mean shit. Like, what are we supposed to do actually? You know?
Yeah.
Do you work? Do you specifically not work and just be with people? How long do you not work and be with people? is it okay if you just want to work instead and like deal with it later? Like, it was such a mixture of reaction and intimacy with workplace people in a way that up until then was like, you know, workplace pals. You have your workplace pals and you talk about the ball game, and like there's like a limit to how exposed you are to people emotionally. But for that to
happen, we all go out and get salads sometimes.
Sure.
Like, yeah, we're not like hanging out.
But to do that at work and to be, to suddenly turn into a real and complete emotional person at work together was a profoundly emotional thing. And to answer the point that you've made, I don't know how you go back to work after something like this. And especially after I did have to go back to work after something like this. I don't know how you do it. I guess you just do.
It is a guiding principle on which Darth Vader is based. Now, if you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
Adam, I clicked this this actress's thing on the X-ray. Ensign Calloway is played by Joanna McCloy. There are four things that she is known for on this. Is one of the craziest lists of things I've ever seen. She's known for Star Trek The Next Generation, Mad TV in 1995. Apparently she was on Mad TV.
Whoa!
A thing from 2017 called Generations, and something called I Killed My Lesbian Wife, Hung Her on a Meat Hook, and Now I Have a 3-Picture Deal at Disney, 1993.
Wow.
What is that? So, like, around the same time as this?
What do you call that movie for short? Like, what's the industry name for that movie?
Like the, do you watch Curb?
Yeah, exactly.
I gotta go
back to Meat Hook. We're not through shooting. Wow, what a broad career.
Holy shit. Adam, this is the title of a short film, director Ben Affleck.
Of the Afflecks?
Yeah, Ben Affleck, specifically.
Whoa.
Holy shit. I've got to find this movie.
All I'm thinking about now is that scene from the Duncan sketch where Casey throws his coffee at the windshield of that car.
Best part of my day is when I'm at Duncan. You think that's sad?
That is bonkers bananas. I can't believe that that is a thing that exists in the world.
Can you say the title of that film in the Boston accent?
I killed my lesbian wife, hung her on a meat hook. Now I have a 3-picture deal at Disney.
Perfect. Perfect. Moving on.
Well, Adam, what were we here to do today? I feel like the fact that that exists and I just found that out has erased my brain.
Well, Ben, there's a death investigation and two cops are on the scene. It's Officer Troy and Sergeant Worf.
Yeah. It's a real buddy cop drama. Troy goes down to the nacelle and she's like, "Hey, you're the lady with the rough tongue." Anyways, let me just
I got this carrot. You want this carrot?
Oh, you slobbered all over my hand. Isn't that just cute?
Oh, but it feels so scratchy.
She climbs up the ladder to the catwalk that that Lieutenant Kwan jumped off of. And she's up there, and she gets a personal banger dropped on her. And she's, like, totally overwhelmed, and she, like, almost stumbles back over the guardrail. And, like, we smash cut to Six Bay, and, like, Worf and Riker and Dr. Beverly are there. And she's like, "Yeah, that shit was crazy. I, like, walked up to the door he jumped through, and I was, like, feeling all of these terrifying and negative feelings, but they weren't really coming from anybody in particular. They were just like there in the room."
everyone makes sure to tell her how her powers work. They're like, now, Deanna, you aren't able to detect emotions from people unless they're there. So I don't know what you think this is, but it appears that like whatever emotional serotonin levels are in you, like those are just off the charts.
Yeah, they really have the need to empath-splain to her how these things work. And so she's, like, advised by the doctor, like, your psilocybin levels are really high, so like, let's knock it off with going down to the nacelle for a little while, and we'll sort it out. When you've gotten back to normal, maybe you and Worf can go down there together and look into it.
Yeah, they keep getting paired off, this yeah. Worf and Troy thing.
This is like the kind of, I'm going to say like the 15-minute mark of the episode, and this is where Troy's upper lip starts looking real weird. Do you notice this, Adam?
I also noticed this. Remember when Brent Spiner fell and chopped up his chin and they had to like make up him back together for that one ep? Like, I wonder if she fell down or like otherwise hurt herself.
Yeah, maybe Michael Dorn threw an elbow accidentally.
You know how he does. Yeah, but to answer your question, I definitely noticed.
The rest of this episode is largely just kind of like investigation, investigation, investigation. Somebody saying you need to wait, you know, 16 to 24 hours before doing something. Like, there's all these like little excuses of time introduced, like, oh, it's going to take me 16 hours to synthesize a thing that suppresses your empathic abilities, or you need to wait 4 to 5 hours to let the like levels of your neurotransmitters go back to normal. And so like in those downtimes, Troy and Worf wind up kind of like spending a lot of time together, and they're getting closer and closer, and they're hanging out in her quarters at one point, and Worf like takes her by the hand and kind of brings her in close, and he goes for the neck kiss as the first kiss.
What a weird choice.
That is so aggro, man.
When he takes her hand, I expected her to squeeze it until blood came out. Because you know that's his way too, right?
That is kind of his thing. I just tried to do like the thought experiment of like thinking about the first time I kissed my wife. What might she have thought of me if I had gone for neck as the opening kiss before going for mouth? Like, I think she would have probably like kneed me in the balls and never talked to me again.
I don't see how the reflex response isn't like raise the shoulders. Like, what are you doing?
What the hell? Get away from me.
There's a tension up until this moment in the episode that is real and interesting to me. The idea of like having a work wife or a work husband. Like, this is a thing. This is mm-hmm. a thing that I've felt before. Like that good platonic friendship that you get from just like being in the shit with someone. Like day in and day out. But there is something a little bit more here, and that Worf decides to explore that feeling through the neck is so bold. Yeah. And not only that, like, they fucking do it.
Yeah.
Like, he sticks around. Like, he does not leave the condo.
No, he waits stays for breakfast the next morning. They totally bang.
I wonder what Klingon breakfast is.
Delicious.
And how disgusting Deanna Troi, noted sweet tooth, finds Klingon breakfast.
Given what eggs we know Worf likes.
Ugh.
Yeah, there's a pretty fun scene in 10 Forward, like a little bit before this, where Riker's like clearly on a date with somebody and Worf is just drinking alone, and Riker comes back to the bar to get like another round, and Worf is like, hey, listen, like, just theoretically, is there anybody on the ship that you definitely don't want me to fuck? And Riker's like, what are you talking about, man? And he's like, no, like, I'm just saying, like, I would never
fuck somebody that you're trying to fuck.
But also, like, if you had fucked them previously, I would also have weird feelings about going in after you.
I don't want us to have that kind of relationship. Anyways, all this human emotion management shit really doesn't work for me, so I'm gonna get out of here. But sorry I even brought it up. Sorry.
This scene is so much fun. Both because Riker is rocking, like, the lime green open V, like, flamenco guitar shirt.
Yeah, like, Riker is rocking a shirt that if he leans over at all, you can catch some titty.
Yeah. And also his posture during this entire scene, he's doing some great physical acting here.
Yeah.
In only the way that freaks can do.
Get a load of some titty, Worf.
He's a little bit act buzz here too. Like like his eyes are sort of floaty and he himself is kind of floaty.
Yeah. He's very much off duty.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, Worf is in uniform and Riker is not, and Riker is leaning into how not in uniform he is.
Why are there not 40 different versions of the off-duty Will Riker action figure? Because I would collect all of those. Just deeper and deeper Vs.
I feel like bumping into somebody on a date at a place, like, you don't lay an emotional conversation on them like this when you catch them by themselves, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I was down at the bar and my buddy was there on a date. Anyways, I asked him, like, a really heavy question. It's not a good look, Worf.
No, not really. But Riker doesn't mind. He's totally amused by this.
My love is a fever, long and chill for that, which longer nurse the disease.
Back in investigation storyline, Worf and Troy go back to the nacelle, and she goes back up to like the place where it feels the baddest, and she gets a vision. She's like seeing like a woman in an engineering work suit being terrified. She sees the rubber soul vision of Drake from Aliens.
Man, you look just like I feel.
She sees like the woman and another dude making out and then like turning and seeing that she's watching them and laughing at them.
It's weird that like all of these scenes that she sees are not of something terrifying, but they are terrifying in terms of music and composition. Taken separately, there's not a lot there. But taken all together, there's a heavy emotional banger.
And she like turns around and like suddenly the nacelle is not the nacelle, the functional nacelle anymore. It's like mid-construction nacelle. And there's like, you know, bales of wire and like tubing and like construction debris. And she sees a lunch pail with Utopia Planitia written on it.
Nice to see that the Stanley Company still exists, making those great coffee things with the little cup on top.
Little thermos, yeah, a little work thermos. They're the only capitalist enterprise still operating in the 24th century. But she's like stumbling around this work site and she like bumps into Worf and he's like, what the hell was happening? And she's like, oh, like I just had like a vision of people laughing at me because I wasn't making out with them.
They're doing that form of laughter that is the cruel kind.
Yeah.
Like, and you can tell. Yeah. You can tell when you see someone who is laughing when they are laughing at you versus laughing at a thing.
It's that feeling I had when I pointed out there was a fire on that hillside and that maybe we should call the fire department. Not a good feeling.
There's nothing funny about fires on the plane, Ben.
Yeah. Oh, man. That may never be funny to anybody but me, Adam. But she's got some faces to look into. So she does this computer search where she's got like the people that worked on building the entrepreneur at Utopia Planitia and the people that have served on the entrepreneur. And so she's like looking at bios and she finds Private Drake among them.
This search is insane to me, Ben. We know from experience that Deanna Troi is like an expert in terms of like the sort of research into lineage, into family records.
She's great at she's great at ancestry.com.
And she mentions to Worf, like, God, there's just so many people who work at Utopia Planitia, and I'm looking for this guy, and I can't seem to find him. And she's clearly, like, she's narrowed the search down to Utopia Planitia, but she didn't limit it to gender. So she's, like, cruising through male and female returns on her search. Like, she doesn't think to reduce it to the one search parameter that could cut out half of the results. Come on, Troy.
Also,
get with
this
it.
Is a small town, you know? There's 1,000 people on the ship. What are the chances she doesn't know exactly this dude?
She's seen him before.
Yeah. She's seen him leering at her from across 10 forward while she plows through a chocolate mousse or something.
She's seen him lurking in the ship's laundromat.
Honey. Hush.
Cruising.
She's seen him using that Steadicam rig to hold his heavy machine gun as he goes through the terraforming installation on LV-426.
Ben, when you're Boggs from Shawshank Redemption, is all of your laundry just different colored handkerchiefs? Like, do you have to wash them all separately?
I don't know. I don't know how it works when you're Boggs from Shawshank Redemption, Adam.
I'll tell you what it's like when you're Boggs from Shawshank Redemption. You get typecast as creepy face guy.
Yeah.
He has resting creepy face.
Yeah.
Mark Ralston doing the heavy lifting with his face.
Yeah. But he hangs out with that Latina Marine who's like, you know.
Vasquez.
Yeah, Vasquez. She's kissed him into the group. Otherwise, people wouldn't like Private Drake, but Vasquez sticks up for him.
Drake dies great, so does Vasquez. Like, they all die great.
Yeah.
They die heroes. Except for Burke. Fuck you, Burke.
Yeah. The evil space Jew.
This installation has a substantial dollar value attached to it.
It's the most fucking anti-Semitic movie in the world. Everybody knows that the future is a grim and capitalist place, but what my movie presupposes is maybe Jews run everything.
How do you turn Weyland Yutani into Weylandstein
Yutanovitz? Yeah.
Oh man. that is the dumbest, cheapest laugh. Tell me you wouldn't wear that shirt though, Ben.
Weylandstein Yutanovitz.
Well, you get to decide if we keep that one in the up.
I mean, like, we'll probably get shit for that the same way we get shit for Picard and Wesley jokes. It's like,
sure,
we're making fun of something being anti-Semitic, not being anti-Semitic.
Right. There's a huge difference there.
Yeah.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
Worf and Troy have their little fuck fest, and the doctor brings Troy down to Six Bay for some new inhibitors that are going to turn off her emotional abilities so that she can go into the nacelle without concerns of being swept away into this, like, alternate reality she keeps disappearing into. And she goes down there and she's trying to kind of, like, A-B what she sees. Like, what does this look like in comparison to what I saw in my vision? And notably, Worf has not been able to accompany her because they're like transporting some medical shit and security something something something. So so she's down there and like they're poking around and she like points at a panel and she's like, that's where all the shit is coming from, all the bad fifis. Like when you pulled that plate off, like even though I'm suppressed, like something came through. Why don't you guys point all of your instrumentation at that? And so they scan it, and Geordi, like, turns on the X-ray beam, and there's, like, a skeleton in the wall, like baked into the wall.
It's the same beam that they use to detect the warp bugs.
Yeah.
That were stuck to them, those parasites. Like, this is basically the Dateline NBC UV spectrum flashlight that they have.
It's the Woods light with the UV filter.
You do not want to point that at a hotel room remote control, Ben.
You and I just spent a lot of nights in hotel rooms, and I was glad I didn't have one of those with me, because I feel like the temptation is to use it, but I feel like you're happier if you don't know, you know?
You ever smell a remote in a hotel room? You don't want to do that.
I don't know why I would smell something that is inside my asshole, Adam.
You're not nearly that flexible.
No. They're like, they get these bones.
You were going to tell me a hotel room story, Ben. I
was
going to
recall the hotel that we stayed at that had IV services. Like, they would send somebody to your room to give you an IV bag to make your hangover go away.
Which did not turn me off enough to not want to try it. Like, I was oddly curious about that.
I just don't want a hotel putting something directly into my veins.
Can you think of a less sterile environment than a shared hotel room? Like, we're talking about remotes being put in assholes. Like, you're getting an IV put in next to that remote.
Right. Yeah, like, you just picture the technician coming in and, like, moving the remote to the side so that they can, like, put their wares out on the thing. And in that contact, you know, they shift the Gideon's Bible and the remote out of the way. And in that contact, they've just put some unspeakable shit onto their fingertips.
Gah. Yeah. I can't imagine. There was like 10 different things on that menu too. A cocktail of IV treatments depending on your needs.
Yeah. If it hadn't been $300, maybe I would have been tempted, but it was $300.
Yeah. That's a great expense.
That's there for rock stars, right?
Those IVs are for people who didn't have to rent a car spontaneously and drive 6 hours to Toronto in Cleveland.
Yeah, Cleveland Hotel notably did not have the IV IV thing on offer.
Not a big market in the Cleveland hotel room.
Seems like people are a little bit better behaved over there. Well, anyways, Troy and Worf are off to a bit of a rocky start in their relationship, because Troy has like spotted Worf like hanging out a little bit extra with Ensign Calloway, the fetching young lady that Lieutenant Quan left behind, and she's like pretty openly jealous of the fact that Worf and Ensign Calloway have like done some computer together. And so they, like, hop on a turbo lift at one point, and she's like,
"Do you regret what happened last night?"
And Worf is like,
"No, of course not."
There seems to be a bit of, like, grief continuity erroring happening with Calloway, because, like, she just lost her boyfriend in an awful way, and yet, outside of the one scene in the beginning where she's told, she seems great afterwards. And I'm not going to, like, question the way that people process their grief in situations like this, but her grief is never addressed again.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, what you have to kind of take into account is that this actress was on set, and she was like, "Listen, I'm really, like, trying hard to prepare for my role, and I killed my lesbian wife, hung her on a meat hook, and now I have a 3-picture deal at Disney." So, like, if I could, like, have a character that is a little bit less emotionally fraught than that, that'd be great.
I really need a break.
So they've narrowed it down to Ensign Drake as the suspect, and Worf is gonna go like put the screws to him, and Troy goes back to her room, and she's like, you know, she's about to like replicate herself up some chocolate or something, and he walks in. And he's like,
"Lieutenant Worf said he wanted to talk to me about something."
And she's like, "What are you doing here?" And she feels really unsafe, so she calls security down. And they come down, and he's like, "I don't get what the, like, what's the big whoop? Worf said you wanted to talk to me about something? Like, this is super weird." And she like tells security to take him away, and she's like trying to get in touch with Worf, and Worf is not picking up, and the computer tells her that Worf is in Ensign Calloway's quarters. So she goes down there, opens the door, and in a direct reference to the two people making out and laughing at that we saw earlier, Worf and Ensign Calloway are in there making out, and they turn and see Troy, and they start laughing right at her. Laughing in her face. Worf is a real dog.
Worf is also a great laugher, and we get so few Worf laughs in this series, but when he really cuts loose, it is a joy.
It's like Jaws, you know? Like, it really has impact when it pops out. She grabs a dustbuster, and she fucking wastes him, man.
The dustbuster that I guess was just out on a table.
Yeah. Ensign Calloway was like in the midst of cleaning her gun when Worf came over for a makeout sesh.
And good for Counselor Troy, like center massing Worf, taking him down.
Yeah.
She is horrified at what she's done. She has immediate regret about murdering Worf.
Many regrets.
Scene.
Yeah. She definitely holds the phaser like she's not used to gadding people.
Yeah.
You know, she holds it like a grandma holds a TV remote.
Do you think phasers for seniors have larger buttons? Like those phones?
Yeah. Glow in the dark, everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Troy like stumbles out into the hallway horrified at what she's done, and she's like running. And she's like about to go around a corner when the security detail is walking Private Drake, and she like bumps right into him, and just emotionless, he says, "You know what you've got to do," which is a phrase that Lieutenant Kwong said right before he jumped into the plasma.
Yeah.
So we find her like at the ledge with Third Eye Blind playing in the background, looking out over the plasma nacelle, and she's saying to herself she knows what she has to do as she like weeps and contemplates her impending death when she gets grabbed.
Worf, for the win,
yeah,
reaches in and pulls her away, and it turns out all of this has happened in the span of a couple of seconds. Like, a spell has been broken.
Yeah, the first time she went up on that catwalk and had that personal banger dropped on her, that was the last time we were in reality. This has all been happening in Troy's head.
She is a puddle in Worf's arms. She is relieved and horrified at how close she came to ending her life. There's a spiral of emotions in her that I think she acts the shit out of.
Yeah.
It's heavy.
It also makes me think that, like, Riker could have saved Lieutenant Kwan from this fate if he had just grabbed him, you know?
I thought the same thing. He was right there.
He just needed to snap out of it.
Instead, he was, like, fumble-fucking around with an old car disc man and speaker system. Like,
trying to hold that boombox up over his head.
You know, if you put the CD in, like, on that little platter thing and it doesn't, like, connect all the way, it'll, like, start scratching inside and you got to open it up and press it back down firmly.
Yeah, you don't have to replace that CD just because you didn't seat it properly in the disc changer. So what Troy's extendo hallucination has revealed and what is corroborated by Geordi going down and scanning the bulkhead is that there was, in fact, a murder involving Private Drake at Utopia Planitia, but it was a murder-suicide. He killed a couple that left him feeling an unrequited love and then jumped into the plasma stream himself. He had a dab of Betazoid in him, and when he jumped into the plasma stream, the, like, subspace something-something knocked a bunch of his neural atoms into the bulkhead, and they left like an empathic echo that was perceptible to Lieutenant Kwan because of his alien heritage and to Troy because of her Betazoid heritage.
This is a really interesting variation of ghost mythology to me.
Mm.
You know, like the idea of when people die, they turn into spirits that can then be that then have feelings that can be felt by the living. Like, this seems like what that is. And it made me think, like, on a planet full of empaths like Beta Zed, like, how many deaths occur on that planet that could cast off these sort of after images? Like, I wonder if the Betazoid homeworld is a profoundly haunted place for that reason.
Yeah. You gotta make sure that people do not commit suicide via subspace methods.
Right. Yeah. But as far as canon goes, really interesting, I thought.
It also sort of illuminates something I've always wondered about Troy's abilities, which is that they have something to do with subspace. Like, you know, yeah. She's always able to kind of like get something off of people on the view screen. And I'm always like, mm-hmm. How the fuck is that possible if they're like, if it's just, but it's all, it's, they use subspace to communicate. So if the empathic abilities are somewhat based on something going on in subspace, I guess that sort of, you know, completes that circle.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Here's an interesting bit of trivia. It says, during Deanna's protracted hallucination, there are no exterior shots of the entrepreneur. This is a common method used in the show when the storyline is false or in someone's mind.
Interesting. Wow.
Yeah, I never
knew that. I am glad I didn't know that bit of trivia before watching the series this time, because I would have looked out for it.
Yeah.
It would have ruined the fun. I love that they were thoughtful enough about production and editing that this was a thing that they observed. Like, we make fun of a lot of the rules of this show, but
that's a pretty next level shit.
Yeah.
Did you like this episode, Adam?
I really did. A lot. This is an especially science fiction-y episode while also being totally human and emotional.
Yeah.
And it was a great combination of the two. I thought this was a great bottle send-off for Marina Sirtis / Deanna Troi. If this is her last episode where she is the focus, I thought she did great in it. I think this is one of the high points of season 7.
Yeah,
what about you?
This is a solid ep. I liked it a lot too. It was fun to see Private Drake in there. It was fun to have kind of a procedural where it's not a murder investigation but a suicide investigation. Like, I feel like that is an interesting, a uniquely interesting problem in this environment, because it is so much not something a Starfleet would do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that sort of pervades their feelings about everything as they go through the episode.
Yeah, just a different tone and feeling throughout for that reason.
Adam, should we check in on our P1 inbox, see if there's anything in there?
Yeah, let's do that.
Priority 1 message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a Priority 1 message here from Jeff, or Joff, in Washington, D.C., for Keenan in Montreal. Goes like this. Kind of crazy Canuck leaves the Risa that is Montreal, boards the 13-hour train to D.C., and spends his birthday in the orange space butthole capital of Trumpistan, just so he can take in the premature assimilation spectacular with his buddy. Thanks, man.
Whoa.
This is for your birthday, for being my friend for 25 years, and for showing me this podcast. Whoa.
Ben, I think one of the most surprising elements of the tour were the people who came up with us after the show and said, yeah, I flew in from England, or I took a 13-hour train ride from Montreal.
Amazing.
Like, I was blown away by the distances that people came to see the shows on the tour. Like, I still don't believe that.
That's so cool. Yeah. Well, happy birthday, Keenan. Looks like we missed his birthday by a bit. His birthday was actually the 25th, which I believe was the night of that show.
Cool.
Oh, no, the 27th. Sorry. I'm looking at the wrong thing. But happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday. Ben, our second Priority One message is from Dan. It is for Kathy. Goes like this. Happy anniversary, Kathy. I'm more in love with you now than ever. Even though you made me watch Move Along Home from Deep Space Nine, I'm yours forever. You're so generous, curious, and loving. Here's to many more years of a relationship. Nothing like O'Brien and Keiko's. I love you. And they're celebrating their anniversary on September 3rd. So we will. This episode will have dropped a couple of days after that, but it is with no less feeling that we wish Dan and Kathy a very happy anniversary.
Indeed.
If you have a anniversary pronouncement or any other celebratory message to send to a friend or a lover, go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are $200, both of which are a great way to support the ongoing production of this show. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I'm going to give it to Lieutenant Kwan. Not for something he does, but for something somebody says about him, which is that he was really psyched to get stationed in the port nacelle.
Team port!
Like, that seems like the Siberia of the ship to me. I can't imagine being like, yeah, I'm in the nacelle, baby.
I do a lot of video work for like factory type labor.
Yeah.
And in these large factories, there are teams of people who do, you know, the same thing over and over again. It's a production line. And the degree to which people form their own teams and their mascots and their logos is like a real thing. Like, I shot some team members who called themselves the Wingnuts, like after the Fastener, you know,
yeah.
Like that's a thing. And it's easy to do when you're in a workplace like this. And I think in a pseudo military context, like Starfleet, I think a team left in the cell has got to be a thing, right?
Yeah, it's just him and the lady that, that has all the weird loaf on her face.
Those right in the cell assholes don't know what's happening at all. Team left.
We beat him in the intramural basketball tournament every year.
It's what we do. We're left nacelle.
How about you, Adam? Did you have a drunk Shimoda?
Yeah, I'm going to give mine to Data purely for the I considered suicide story early on in the ep, which just felt so out of place, but also in place in the context of Star Trek as a series. Like, I know they have to turn to camera and make these pronouncements,
yeah,
but it is so awkward when they make the attempt. And so, God, man, there was like 4 seasons between Drugs Are Bad and this, and they seem to have learned nothing from the ham-handedness of how that was handled previously. So, I mean, it's not Brent Spiner's fault. It's just like, it's too bad that there has to be this moment in an episode that doesn't need it. That's just it. You don't need this scene to actually underscore what's happening. You can respect the viewer enough to understand the true stakes here. So I'm going to give mine to Data and that scene more generally.
Right on.
Yarmouk and Jalad at Tanagra.
Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it gonna be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, The Aura Frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura Frame to love it, and I love it too. Because when you give an Aura Frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is coming up. And one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leader in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
What do we have coming up on the next step, Ben?
Next episode is Season 7, Episode 19, Genesis. Picard and Data return to the Enterprise to discover the entire crew has de-evolved into prehistoric beings. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
Ben, it's been a long, long time since I've seen this episode, but I remember really liking it.
I'm excited.
You get your fishy Troy, you get your spidery Barkley, you get your, like, bear-like Worf.
You get your Cro-Magnon Riker.
Like, it doesn't take much to Cro-Magnon Riker, really. It's like maybe a bit of forehead loaf, but other than that, he's like...
He's ready.
He's pretty much he's stock Cro-Magnon. I'm pumped to see this ep. It's been a long time.
Yeah, me too.
Something else that we're pumped for at the end of every ep is checking in with our online communities.
Yeah.
They're over on Facebook and Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. I'm on Twitter as @CutForTime. Ben is there as @BenjaminR, AHR.
Sure I am. You can also check out the Wikia, which has lots of great archaeological insight into where our dumb jokes come from. And also check out the Facebook and the Reddit. We should thank Adam Ragusea for a lot of the custom music you hear on the program, and Dark Materia for our theme song. And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. And an episode of The Greatest Generation that is even less evolved than this, which I wouldn't have thought possible.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.